I wonder how you've come here this morning. In my pastoral experience, the crowds are always larger on Easter, so that must mean that there's a great deal of diversity here in the congregation. I expect that some of you have come here because you're always here, even when it's not Easter. Others of you may have come because, though you're usually here on Sundays, it's Easter. Still others of you may have come because someone invited you, or someone forced you, or you simply came out of curiosity. I watched you arriving today, and I noticed that, though you came by automobile or lumbering up the sidewalk, none of you, not one, came running. None of you ran toward Easter, which is curious because according to John's Easter Gospel, there is a great deal of dashing about on Easter. First, according to John, Mary Magdalene came, and she, seeing that the stone was rolled away and the tomb was empty, started running. Not that she believed in the resurrection at this point, that would come later. For now, in the pre-dawn darkness, she just begins running back to tell the rest of the disciples that Jesus' body is gone. On her sprint back to town, she meets Peter and the beloved disciple. In her shock, her fear, she reminds me of somebody I read about after 9/11 in Manhattan. When he saw the tower collapse to the ground, he bolted. He started running, and he ran 30 blocks without looking back, without stopping. The next day, a reporter asked him, "What were you thinking about when you were running?" He said, "I wasn't thinking about anything. I was just running. I didn't know what to do, so I ran." Mary Magdalene, in her grief, ran. Jesus was dead, crucified, buried. Now someone had taken the body, so she ran. On her way back, she met two disciples. And when she tells them what she saw or didn't see, they break into a run. She ran from the empty tomb, but they ran toward it. Notice an interesting detail. John says these two disciples didn't just run together towards the tomb, they ran against one another toward the tomb. They get in some sort of race, rushing now, one gaining on the other, then falling behind, gaining again. Toward what? Why did they run against one another? What did they think they were running toward? Mary Magdalene interpreted the empty tomb as further tragedy. Not only have they killed Jesus, now somebody's stolen his body. Perhaps they are running toward that awful, terrible, last insult. There's been an accident on the school playground, someone tells the mothers at Caldy's. And every one of them jump up and start running towards the school. Why run? Why run toward the tragic? If it's not your child who's hurt, then some other mother's child is hurt. We run toward both good news and bad. We must know, and know quickly, if the news is for us. Perhaps they ran as rivals. Throughout John's Gospel, it's Peter who is the leader of the disciples, the one with the ready word on most occasions. But it was this beloved disciple, whoever he was, who seemed closest to the heart of Jesus. They ran to see which one of them, Peter, the leader of the disciples, or the one who was beloved, which one would arrive first. A group of kids are walking down the sidewalk, arm in arm. Somebody shouts from down the street, "There's free ice cream being given out at the corner." And watch them become rivals as they race down to the corner. They want to see if the good news is true, if it's good news for them. As these two disciples run, surely there is something in them which tells them in this strange event they are running toward a strange, new, possibly terrifying future. Somebody says, "Come, look at this," and we come. We run toward exactly what we do not know, but we run. And perhaps that describes you this Easter. You've come here, but I ask you, why have you come? You have no ready answer. Perhaps you do not know why you've come here. You have no clear picture of what you think you'll see or experience. I think John says that these two sprinting disciples came to Jesus' tomb like that, not knowing what they were running towards, toward some strange new event which they intuited would mean a change in their world. John says that the beloved disciple outran Peter, won the race, got there first. And that may seem like a small detail, but it isn't. Because it's interesting that John mentions that the beloved disciple got there first. Not only that, John says that he was the first one to peer into the empty tomb and to believe. The beloved disciple was the first to believe in Easter. I think that John not only wants to tell us that the beloved disciple got there first, but also the way he got there. Others came to Easter in different ways. Mary will not believe until she stands face to face with the risen Christ and hears him call her name, Mary. Thomas doesn't believe until the risen Christ offers him his wounds, his pierced side, his hands. But the beloved disciple comes to Easter another way. He believes without seeing. He doesn't hear Jesus. He doesn't touch the risen Christ. All he does is come, peer into the dark, empty tomb, and he believes. The beloved disciples, unlike the others, believes in the resurrection in the light of Jesus' absence. There is nothing there. There's no evidence, no shroud of Turin, no photographs, just an empty place. But he saw and believed, John says. Now, can you see why John probably went into all this about the foot race? The very first believer in the resurrection, the first person to believe in the triumph of God, got there by the same path that you and I do. He got there by not seeing the risen Christ. To almost no one here, I suspect, has the risen Christ personally appeared in a garden and called you by name, as he did Mary. To almost no one here has the risen Christ offered his wounds, allowed you to touch his side and believe. We have believed on the basis of the words, "He is not here." Blessed are those who have not seen, says Jesus, which means all of us today, and yet have come to believe. How did the beloved disciple come to faith in Easter on that first day? I think it's trust. The beloved disciple knew his beloved Jesus. And so when he saw the empty tomb, he did not think about abandonment, about death, about defeat. He thought about freedom. He thought about victory. In a moment, he sensed that Jesus had taken their relationship to a new, unexpected, more wonderful place. The child psychiatrist Eric Erickson says that a child develops trust in the first 6 months of life. The infant learns that when it cries out, momentarily a voice will be heard saying, "There, there, what's wrong?" Or a loving face will soon appear. The infant learns that parents care, that the world is a trustworthy place. Eventually, the infant will tolerate long absences of the parent. The infant doesn't need the parent physically to be present every moment of the day, clearly in sight, because the young child has learned that even though the parent is not right there in view, the parent is nearby. The parent will come when called. Trust. The beloved disciple did not have proof, as we call proof. He had no legal certification of the resurrection. Yet he had his relationship with Jesus, and that was enough, and he believed. And so have you. Blessed are those who, having not seen, have yet believed. Blessed are you this Easter morning. Amen.